Katie Bowman, biomechanist and author of Movement Matters. Thank you, Katie, for taking time to talk to KBOO.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So what made you decide to become a biomechanist?
If I went to my earliest memory, I think it's watching Wizard of Oz and watching the Tin Man move with what seemed like his joints all on the outside of his body. That's my earliest memory of being like, oh, that's really fascinating, like where joints are. You know, I hadn't thought of my body in that way of having hinges. And when I got into college, I was interested in well-being and health. But I started to be interested also in movement at the same time. I was pretty sedentary, kind of a bookworm, physics and math kind of geek. And then I just started moving, and I found that I felt tremendously better, and that really definitely directed my studies. And I was just drawn, I think, to biomechanics, which is studying human movement and how the human body and how it performs, its physiology, really does relate back to kind of the mechanics of the entire thing. There's certainly lots of other influencers, but I was just interested in blending my two loves of physics and math and movement. And so I became a biomechanist.
How is biomechanism different than Alexander technique or many other movement study arts?
Oh, well, biomechanics is a science. So it's really studying the equations and the principles, where I would say that there are lots of systems that help you focus on how that, like, to even understand that you could move a different way. I think that that's an important idea that many people aren't aware of. Like, they just think that, oh, I have a way that I walk, I have a way that I stand, I have a way that I am physically, but a lot of that is influenced by how you move, how you choose to move. And so there are many systems that kind of introduce this idea, like, well, did you know when you stand, you could, you know, center your weight between your legs instead of always, you know, have your hand on one hip and your other leg out in front of you, kind of not carrying your weight at all. So there's lots of systems that utilize principles that come from biomechanical research or just kind of an understanding of forces in human movement. But one is kind of the science of the principles that affect everything, and then the other one are systems that people build from that understanding. So they all have value. I think many people in many different systems that aren't exactly the same, they have different nuance, but have found great relief just from understanding that they can actually put their body more often where they want it to go rather than just kind of feel like a passenger to their body.
Gotcha. So it sounds like with Alexander technique, it's to the study and focus of how we believe our bodies are moving, and biomechanists, you know, you're really using science and data to see what's underneath that and see why it is somebody is moving the way they are moving and how we can consciously then say, actually, I want to move in this more healthier way.
Yeah, I just think that there one is a set of principles and then one is the application of those principles.
What moved you to take this distinction into the book Movement Matters? I really enjoyed yeah, I've gotten through a lot of it. I really like the chapter Wet Bones. We can get to that in a second.
Oh, right.
But what made you decide, oh, you know what, this needs to be in a book. We really need, you know, to share go beyond the principles and go deep into how our body moves and why that's important.
Well, you know, biomechanics and movement systems will often focus on this idea of alignment, that there's a way that your body can be positioned when you're moving, and like in a range of movements that you can use that in the end create particular outcomes. Movement Matters is where I say, yes, there is this idea of alignment, but it isn't necessarily, it's not person-centric. It's not something that is only within yourself, that the way that we move also is, you know, participating in the in the ecosystem. There's an ecology to movement, if you will. And so many of our movement models that we use are very, they're very simple models. They're like, if you think about exercise, it's something that you need to, you know, do to make your heart stronger or your back less susceptible to injury or to keep your muscles or your abs looking a particular way. But Movement Matters is looking at movement as a natural phenomenon, saying, you know, here are natural human movements that like that you've found in populations of humans for very long time, like throughout entire human history, and how what drives movement. You know, right now I don't really need to move at all. I just came back through an airport where you could sit down as soon as you came to the airport and just type on a pad, and anyone from the airport would bring you something. They could bring you a drink. They could bring you the food that you ordered. You just paid right there. Everything has become movement is not necessary, but that wasn't the case for, you know, all of our human ancestors. We had to move to get food, to get shelter, to get water. You can find a mate online now. You don't even have to go out and strut your stuff. You can do it all online. And so it was just the idea of, well, movement actually has a role in ecology. We discuss carbon footprints and you know, the effect of our consuming choices, but I try to link the idea of movement, something that you do or do not do, is also related to how much you have to kind of like bring in to keep you going versus you going out and getting. So Movement Matters was just to try to broaden the discussion of exercise. It's like exercise isn't necessarily something humans need. Humans do need movement, but exercise is what you end up with when you are in a culture that is outsourced most of its movement, that has become so dependent on convenience that it seems like exercise is something that is required, and we kind of stress about how that's supposed to fit in, where I'm saying, well, it's because exercise isn't really the natural phenomenon. Movement is, and here's how it works. And so I just felt that that needed to be said at some point as everyone struggles to deal with sedentarism.
I wanted to say that was so revolutionary, but as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, but actually not, because we need movement, and that's just like how that's been for thousands of years. So I think you're just shining a light on what should be the obvious, but I think that is incredible and really poignant how you pointed out the difference between exercise and movement. And that I think with exercise, it's almost become a triggering word for many on a certain level, where it's like, oh, well, you hear people say, oh, I hate exercise. I hate that, you know. But I would hope that we're in a world now that will understand that moving is really good for you. I think, we should just start using that word, I think, instead of exercise. Like, how do you want to move? Do you want to dance? Do you want to go on a walk? And I loved the opening in the book. You had a really lovely foreword by somebody who was in a really bad way and began walking. And just from the walking, were they able to kind of rekindle a relationship with their bodies and get healthy. I was hoping you could go more into the ways that human movement can change ecology. The next step being DNA. It talks a little bit about that. But can you go into the more interconnectedness? You touched a little bit about food also, in terms of we are living in a sedentary world where there's this convenience factor and we don't really have to go anywhere to find a mate, get food, any of that stuff. How is sedentary world just connecting us from the rest of the ecosystem?
Well, we don't really live in a sedentary world. We live within a sedentary culture within a world that is not equally sedentary. So I do think it's important to clarify that we're talking about the problems of one particular small group that outsources its work tremendously, and I don't think you'll see this equally across the globe. You'll see it, again, you know, to a very large extent within a particular culture. But that also being said, that was also a part of Movement Matters, is to say there are so many things that almost everything requires movement. The way that I talk about movement ecology in the book is to talk about, I use stacking or the idea of movement permaculture as, you know, every day you know, as we're listening to this, we can think of like the needs that we have, and we tend to categorize our needs, like this is the need of my employer or for my work, this is the need for my family, these are needs for my personal relationships, maybe these are needs for my community, these are my dietary needs, these are my exercise needs, right? They're all separate, but that they're occurring separately is not really, it doesn't have to be that way. So, you know, I've got, when I had little kids, every day I was like, oh my gosh, like I have to feed us, I have to like be responsible for educating and modeling these children, I need to exercise every day, I need to, you know, be outside now that like there's this idea of like nature is something that is like a nutrient that we have to have, and it just felt very stressful with the fact that there's heaps and heaps of kind of must-dos every day, but there's no addition of time. We just keep getting more and more releases of these things that we need, and it's not like your employer goes, oh, you need that? Great. Well, then you can take 20 minutes off your day to go get that. The needs are piling up, and our time seems to be dwindling. So that's where I really became interested in where movement occurs naturally, because then I could see, like, okay, well, I could take a walk with my kids, and I know where there is an old garden and an apple tree. And what I'll do is I'll walk with them down here. And it's going to take a long time because they're little. They're like 2 and 3. But I'll get to talk to my neighbor on the way there and meet people that I didn't know. And we got outside for 2 hours. And I walked for 2 hours. And then we, you know, gathered some food along the way that became, you know, dinner later on. And it was just the idea that when you're just moving through nature to get the things that you need, that offers lots of abundant nature as well as kind of a diversity of the types of movement that you would do. But at first, because we're an exercise-centric culture, it's like if your exercise isn't done at 70% heart rate and you're not sweating and you're not like in a special space for exercising or with your gear or your outfit, we tend to devalue movement. We tend to devalue non-exercise movement because we don't perceive that it's what we need as much as fitness as what we need. So I'm just trying to explain that there's an ecology to, by me moving in this way, not only did my kids get the 2 hours of movement and nature time, so that's a box that I would check. I got 2 hours of movement and nature time. We were also able to get some food for that bout, and there was a lot of education and connection to our community that happened. And instead of taking 5 separate hours, where normally, you know, I'd have to find a babysitter, go to the gym, drive to the grocery store, maybe go online to chat with an online community that I'm participating in. Instead of doing it over 5 hours, I just did all of that in 2 hours and then reduced my consumption of driving, of needing other spaces to be there for me to get the thing done. So there is a relationship between kind of consumerism and what we consume, and I think sedentarism, and the fact that, again, we really believe movement to solely mean exercise and this thing that has to happen during fitness time only. And so not only do we struggle to meet our kind of movement minimums, we also then tend to kind of hyper-consume because we don't know where movement fits in.
Wanted to circle back to wet bones and the discovery that that there's goo that are in bones. And it kind of knocked out of the park for me this idea of like there's wet bones, or like, you know, when you're really young, you have young bones. And then as you get older, they naturally become brittle. And that's when you get told to just eat a bunch of calcium all day and that will do something for that. But even though the chapter was really brief, I thought it was kind of mind blowing in terms of it seemed to imply that there's a lot more that goes into healthy bones than just taking the calcium. Does movement affect that with bones? Were you finding that in your research as a biomechanist?
Well, that essay, Wet Bones, was about, you know, there's this idea that we want strong bones and minerals are hard, right? So if our density goes down, we have less of this strength. But at the same time, supple bones, like bendy bones, are also what reduce fracture risk. So it's like we want dense bones, yes, but we also want supple bones, right? So if you land on an outstretched arm, if the bone can give a little bit, and so I use a green twig fracture as this idea that, like, if you take a green twig and you load it by bending it, you'll find that the whole thing doesn't really snap. You know, it just kind of, it can bend quite a bit before maybe it splinters on one side, versus a very dry bone, a dry stick. If you bend it, it just kind of like snaps instantly. It takes much less force to break a dry bone than this green bone. So those things are always in conflict. It's like, well, for me as a biomechanist, what is it? Do we need strong bones or do we need bendy bones? Because I couldn't figure out how we would get both, given this idea that bone density was the way to stronger bones, more mineral content. But then with newer research, it says, like, well, it turns out that the minerals are in a goo form. So when you have more minerals, more mass to the bone, it's really just full of more goo. So you do get more dense, but that density comes with suppleness, which was exactly what I had been missing. And that's what, you know, when you are working in science, like, there's going to be things that are kind of in conflict until you find the next little bit. So I was just really amazed at that. That made so much more sense. But yes, you know, this idea that bones are strong because of solely what you eat is not an accurate reflection of the process. You know, bones are constantly selecting their density based on load, based on how much you use them. So within a sedentary culture that doesn't call on really, you know, vigorous or abundant or well-distributed use of their bones, then you see that even if you had all of your minerals and were consuming them, the bones would not be signaled to really do anything or put anything in, because the bones aren't, they're not diseased, and they're not losing the mineral because they're diseased as much as the lack of the density there is a reflection, or can be a reflection, of your use pattern. So I was just trying to add this idea. It's like, it's more than just taking a supplement. You could think of movement as really the uptake signal, especially site-specific movement, as creating your bones going, oh, okay, you're going to use this here, well, we're going to have to beef up. So that's, hopefully that is helpful to some who are, you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, create or maintain a robust skeleton. Is you want to keep moving.
I just think that's so cool. That just points it right back into the idea of ecology that you were talking about, where there is this tendency in our culture to end game, you know, where they're focused on exercise or really high level workouts, when it's also just about moving. From what your book and what your studies are telling you, there's an ecology inside each of us, and that we are also a part of the larger ecology. And so I just, that just is pretty incredible. As we wrap up, I know you've got an event coming up, and it is sadly sold out for those who want to see you. Are there other events on the horizon?
Oh, yes. You know, I'm always bopping around. You can, I teach, I have a dynamic aging course, and that's in California in April. And there's always retreats or courses that I'm doing locally, or that some of our teachers are offering, that support some of the other books that I've written, where you can learn how to do the exercises in a live format. So yeah, there's, the horizon is full.
Great.
Full,
well,
of movement opportunities.
Wonderful. So how can our audience get in touch with you? Is there a website, and how do they get a hold of this awesome book, Movement Matters?
nutritiousmovement.com. That has everything. It's got books, events, podcast articles. You can go in there pretty deep.
Awesome. Well, we've been speaking with Katie Bowman, biomechanist. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. All right.